Hello, it is November 5th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 535 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. Welcome back. Hope everyone enjoyed the World Series. I was there for all of it. You may have heard the last podcast we did, which had my stirring, brilliant prediction that the team that won the World Series would do so in five games. Now, of course, the team that I picked to do that was the Mets and not the Royals, but let's not get pedantic, people. Anyway, so we're going to do a wrap up here with Allison Footer today, just to kind of talk about the World Series, kind of look at baseball heading into free agency. And then next week, I am very excited. I'm excited to talk to Allison, of course, but next week, I'm particularly excited because college basketball begins next week. Longtime readers and or listeners to this podcast know my obsession with college basketball rivals my obsession with baseball. I'm very excited to see for the season to start. It starts on November 13th. That's the national opening day. We will have my old friend, and I think he's tied with Joe Sheehan for the most common guest on this podcast, Matt Norlander from CBS. Will do a big honking college basketball preview next week. But first, we need to wrap up the World Series with Allison Footer. All right, Allison, first off, welcome home. You had been on the road. It's funny, I've never been a beat reporter, so I've certainly traveled a lot, but I've never had that sustained gone for. The longest I ever went was I went to cover the Super Bowl to Sochi, which is about 4 weeks, which is a long time. But that was also in one sustained place, and there was nothing to eat, so I lost weight because you were in Russia and the food was terrible. So you have been running around. When you finally got back home, how long had you been away when you finally got back home after Game 5?
You know, it's really funny because I felt like I was away for, like, so long, but it was shorter amount of time than in the past because I actually had 3 division series days in Houston.
Oh, right.
Because, yeah. So, like, actually, it was only from the day after Game 4 of the division series till the end. So it was, like, just a little bit over 2.5 weeks, whereas, like, in the last 2 years, I mean, it's been, like, 30 days. I mean, it's, like, a month straight. Of course, I do get home, and like, right before the World Series, but I don't know. It just felt like it was a little bit longer this year. I'm not exactly sure why.
Well, I guess it's Toronto. I think going to another country makes it feel like – that would be my guess. Yeah,
that's a good point, especially since I flew in and out of Buffalo and drove. So, like, at one point, I was driving from Toronto to Buffalo in the middle of the night to catch a 6 o'clock flight out of Buffalo, and I'm going – what am I doing exactly? Like, what am I insane? I mean, you know, you get through customs very quickly because it's 4 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, you're right. It was absolutely the Toronto factor, which I loved. I loved the fact that the ALCS was there. I had not been to that ballpark before. It was the last one on my list. So, but yes, that I think that kind of knocked me out of commission for a while.
The only time I ever went to Toronto Stadium, my wife's family, her father and her brother live in Buffalo. So I just drove. I think I took his car. I didn't tell him, but I just took it. And I drove to Toronto. And so when I came back from the game, back into the United States, of course, I'm in the car, and I think I was wearing a Blue Jays hat. And the guy stopped, you know, if you go through customs, you have to answer the questions and everything. And it was funny because I instantly felt guilty. I instantly felt like I'd done something wrong. And so then he asked me, he said, so did you go to the game? And I was like, oh, my God, how does he know? They're tracking me. There's like drones. He's like, no, I'm not. And so I said, oh, how'd you know I was at the game? He's like, your hat, you idiot. And I was like, right. And he's like, what was the score? And I was like, oh, my God, I don't know the score. And I completely, like, freaked out. And he's just like, just go, you idiot. So.
Yeah, it was like when I was going into Toronto, and he asked me, when was my last time in Toronto? And I said, 1981, family vacation. He laughed at me and sent me right on through.
that is exactly what a terrorist would say. So let's keep that in mind.
Kept telling people there, I apologize for being a stupid American, like paying with the credit card, with the like, little credit card machine that they have in the cabs, like not having any Canadian money at Starbucks. You know, I just kept apologizing to people for just being an idiot. And they were very, very lovely to me, I have to say.
I'm sure your apologies just made them think you were a Canadian.
No, so, I specified that I was a stupid American.
I know, but the apology is so part of the culture. Were you riding a horse? Okay, no more Canadian jokes. So, World Series, very fun. I have to say, as far as five-game series go, this was one of the more entertaining ones I can remember pretty much across the board. So many kind of crazy things happened. I kept arguing the entire time. Because one of the things that's very frustrating is when you cover – I made a point of this in one of my columns. When you are – if you are a team – for a fan of a team like Houston or Kansas City or – Milwaukee or somewhere in the middle, do hope that if you ever make a World Series, you don't play the Yankees, the Mets, or the Red Sox, because it turns every national reporter into a Mets, Yankees, or Red Sox beat reporter.
Yeah, I read that in your column, and I never thought about it that way, because I think mainly because I was on the Royal side throughout the playoffs, after the Astros were bounced. So,
but it felt like every storyline was not, wow, the Royals made this great comeback. It was, right, oh, the Mets screwed up.
Right. I guess that is. You wonder why. Are they hoping that the Mets win the World Series? Is that a better story for them, or is it a better story if they choke it away?
You know, I wonder if it's that. I think it's a better story if they choke it away, or they overcome their history of choking it away.
Yeah,
because I think that's part of it too. Is, you know, it's also strange too that there seemed to be this consensus that, man, Mets fans have been through so much and they deserve it. Whereas Royals fans, what they've been through has been worse. So I guess that's the eternal question: is would you rather just have? We talked about this before. Would you rather have just nobody care about your team for 30 years? Or would you rather get really close to the mountaintop and then fail, which is actually worse? Royals fans, I mean, to me, I was not surprised to see all – I was blown away by it, but I was not surprised to see all those Royals fans packing for the parade. But I was amazed. But, boy, everyone else seemed very surprised. It's like, wow, the Royals have a ton of fans. It's
you
like,
know,
yes.
Yeah. At the risk of insulting our friends in the Northeast – there is a I don't want to say it's an East Coast bias, because
you can say it.
I think that's a little bit overblown, and I don't think it's like specific enough. I do think that people that are just like from that area or who are like covering baseball or just so immersed in it really truly do not understand what the Pittsburgh Pirates mean to Pittsburgh, what the Kansas City Royals mean to Kansas City. You know, their numbers, just as far as like, even just reporters, like with their blogs, like the reporters from some of these like really crappy teams over time, and they get all this traffic. It's like these markets care about their teams even when they don't care. Yeah. And I live in a city where when they stop caring about their team, they really stop caring.
Yeah, they shut it down.
Yeah, but in these more traditional cities, and I think that it really, like, just some of the comments that I hear from just people that are like based in New York, and I mean, I get it in some ways, and in some ways I'm like, oh my God, like you are so closed in this world that you live in, where the passion and the interest and the traditions are somewhat on a different level, but at the same time they don't understand like why the Kansas City Royals would be a draw for people. Yeah. Let's just put this in perspective. There are 2.3 million people in the Kansas City metropolitan area. There were 800,000 people at that parade.
That's nuts.
It is mind-boggling. You cannot wrap your mind around it. I mean, I was looking at the television ratings that were coming out of Kansas City. It's basically everybody in that city was watching that game.
It was like 80%. That's nuts. That's like 80%. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's great to see. I was going to bring up the TV ratings because I love it when this happens. Like, I do. I absolutely love it. And I think, you know, and it was weird how the Mets, the Royals were treated by a lot of people, frankly, as the supporting characters in the ongoing Mets drama.
Right.
And it's just been, you know, I'll keep that in mind. I will say it made me happy that the Cardinals' two World Series wins were against teams that were not the Yankees or the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Because then it would have just been, oh, everyone would be talking about, well, the Yankees or the Red Sox choked it away. Like, nobody says the Rangers choked away the 2011 World Series. But if that would have been the Yankees, or more specifically the Red Sox, that's, of course, that's what they would say. So,
I mean, the Royals, like, basically got through the postseason by getting in the heads of their opponents later in the games or just leading up to these. I mean, besides the fact that they're a phenomenally good team, and look, we all did not think that they were going to make a repeat performance to get to the World Series again. And a lot of us didn't even have them winning the division, basically because they didn't have that big bopper in the middle of the lineup, which now looking back is just so incredibly stupid. And I'm saying that because I was one of the people that said that.
Me too.
But, you know, the Mets were not that great of a team. I mean, they won the pennant, but they weren't that good. I think the media in the Northeast, they do thrive on wallowing in the pity of themselves and the fan base. I mean, I think that's what drives, drives the passion up there, is just by the fact of when they lose, it's just like the worst thing in the world. Because how could anything be worse than a New York team losing in a postseason?
It's against the natural order of things.
Right.
This is supposed to be the Mets and the Yankees, or there's supposed to be this big drama. It's funny that, like, I was on MLB Now before game four. Yeah, before game four. Before game five. And it was funny because Joel Sherman, who's a very good reporter, and Mark DeRosa, who was a utility baseball player and a very nice man. It was funny. Like, they had three topics, and they got to me, and all three of the topics were all about – they were about the Duda throw. They were about the decision to keep in – the decision to keep in Harvey. They were about all of these things that had absolutely nothing to do with the game itself, with what the Royals were doing. And I actually joked that, like, as the real America correspondent here, I feel obliged to point out the Royals are also in this series. And to me, the number of emails I got, I wrote about the Royals, but the Royals were probably the angle I took most for all of my writing from this series. There was this general relief from Royals fans that someone nationally was writing about them, because it really did feel like a Mets-centric series. I wonder if, and this is always a question whenever we have a team that wins a World Series, if there's going to be, because a large part with the Royals' success, it, not only were they successful, but they did it in a little different way than what we're used to seeing. And they did it with contact, they did it with speed, they did it with kind of aggressive base running. And I wonder if, you know, in the NFL, whatever team just won the Super Bowl, every team just tries to play like that team. I wonder if we'll see that in baseball, or if baseball has become, like, maybe too analytical to even, like, have that kind of philosophy shift in, like, an off season.
Yeah, no, I think it's become way too analytical. And I think that's one of the reasons why I thought it was so great that the Royals won the World Series. I mean, they do.
They use analytics. They absolutely use analytics.
I absolutely use analytics. They're not, like, crazy psychotic about it, and on so many things. Like, they still have a manager who actually manages and isn't just like a puppet for the front office. Uh-huh. And so many of the things and decisions that he made and just would make, like, any of these front offices just completely insane. And that's why I just kind of love that, you know, Ned Yost ended up winning World Series. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it'll ever shift to that, because, first of all, a lot of these analytically driven front offices, I mean, they can't really how do I say this? They have a plan, and they have, like, whatever they're going to do. They're not really going to stray from that. And I mean, these the egos that are in this, and the people that, like, they refuse to possibly even entertain the idea that there might be another idea that they haven't thought of.
I feel like you're just talking about the Astros right now.
No.
I know you're trying.
Well, I mean, the Astros, one of them, yeah. But I mean, there's, like, I think that's the general, just the characteristics of an analytically minded front office. Because while they are really correct and they do a lot of, like, brilliant things, they're also extremely insecure about what they're doing, because it's really, this is still an era of trying to figure out what works and what doesn't in this whole thing. And so, no, I don't think that anybody's going to say, okay, well, no, we don't need home run hitters. We just need guys that can put the ball in play and that never strike out. And you know, I just think that that's not going to be, like, a universal thing.
I think about the insecurity of that, because I see that, but I wonder if part of it is just because, to be entirely honest, you know, it's very frustrating, I'm sure, to a lot of these guys who know that they're right. And they are right, like you say. Know that they're right. But all it takes is just, like, Eric Burns showing up one day and, like, farting on their leg and, like, whipping them with a towel, being like, you guys never played. And then, like, coming away and so on. Because you see, like, I see this on – I, you know, I – one of the things that I – one of my bad habits is I constantly watch MLB Network all year, even when there's no actual baseball going on. So I love, one of the things I like about MLB Network is they've found this like interesting way of having like analytical people and like reporters and former athletes, and they all kind of like throw them into this stew. And it's a very, it makes for often very compelling television, but it also makes sometimes for like Rob Nyer, a very smart man, will come on and say something, and Mark DeRose will be like, fart noise, armpit noise. And Nyer will just kind of be like, yeah, but I'm right. And it's like, I'm pulling up your underwear and giving you a wedgie. Like, you know, there is a certain kind of, it's a analytical notion in a game that about a game itself that's not actually played analytically. And the culture doesn't reward that. Like it's funny. Paul DePodesta, the scouting director for the Mets, you know, he was of course the GM for the Dodgers, and it was funny because he's kind of known as like he's one of the great minds. He's like, you know, the Jonah Hill character is partly based on him. He's like this very like big great character in the game. And still, literally, if you were to say his name in a press box or in a dugout, a lot of people just be like, nerd.
Right. Yeah, and he was the first. Yeah, he was the first. He was before his time. Unfortunately, he did it the wrong time.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing, is that, like, at a certain level, like, I understand, like, the insecurity, because it's just, like, you could be right about everything, but all it takes is TJ Simers to be like, pocket protector guy, that's what you are. And then you just kind of move on. So I understand that. I agree with you. I don't think the Royals are going to start this trend toward Whitey ball. Guess I saw that a couple times. But I do think that there is, I tried to argue that I feel like there actually was an analytical side to their success, in that the one thing that they were really good at, when you looked at all the analytics and all like the Statcast and everything, they were really good at hitting really fast fastballs. And that is what baseball is built around now, is guys that can throw really fast fastballs. So there may be something to that. But on the whole, this is thinking too much about it, because the Royals were incredibly fun to watch.
You know, it's so funny, though, because like the people that are like not the sabermetric people that buy into analytics and also like to think about other things, too. Like, they're kind of like, you know, there's all different ways to look at it. And the analytics people are like, no, no.
They bark. They're barking. That barking.
They are. They're like, oh, my God, you can't say that, because what if you're right?
That's true. Yeah.
I'll leave them alone now.
Yeah, I think that may be a somewhat oversimplification, but I appreciate the no. I appreciate the barking of the no. All right. So is there anything else it's funny how many moments there were in this postseason that at the time felt like the biggest, most amazing, overpowering things that we would ever see. And now we've all, like, the postseason is so long that if we've kind of forgotten, like, obviously everyone will always remember the bat flip and so on, but like, but like the Kyle Schwarber homer, which to me, you know, I mean, I think they're going to keep the ball that they land on top of the scoreboard in right field. They're going to encase it. I keep it where it is, right, and like encase it, which sounds really awesome. Though I kind of feel like you should save that for like a ball that won the World Series or something. Like, I don't know. I mean, it won them Game 4 of the NLDS. Like, it was a very impressive shot. But like, you know, if they win two World Series, they're going to take that ball down.
Of course, but let them win two World Series first. Come on, it's the Cubs.
Yeah,
it's
true.
The Cubs. They had a wonderful moment at Wrigley Field. I mean, how often does that happen? I mean, they had, you know, what was the last big thing that happened at Wrigley Field? The Bartman game was terrible.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose, you're right. Okay, they can wait and win their two World Series to take the ball down. By then,
Be just fine with you, Will.
Well, yeah, that'll be fine, because, you know, by then, you know, of course, the Ice Age will be upon us, or the Earth will have dissolved into a ball and crashed into the sun.
I was going to say, like, California will already have sunk into the ocean.
Oh, yeah, it'd be like the awful New York.
Just be, like, standing on top of, like, the Empire State Building trying not to fall.
Yeah, that crazy Seattle earthquake that the New Yorker warned us about will have totally happened by then.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I actually had this thought, because the Cardinals play in Seattle next year, and I always try to go to one road trip with my dad a year. And I was like, let's do that one. I'm like, nope, we're going to be there when the earthquake hits. I just know it. My dad's never been west. Seattle is, like, Mars to him, and the one time I take him, that's when it'll come. Sorry, Seattle listeners, but you're all gonna die.
We need to talk about one of the most poignant things that actually was such a part to me of the World Series that hasn't actually happened yet, and that is that the Mets open the series in Kansas City next year. And I feel that is why the whole thing did not escalate beyond Noah Syndergaard in that first game, that one game with Escobar and, you know, throwing high and tight, and then it all dissipated. And I feel like it was tabled because the Royals were like, let's win this World Series because we have them exactly where we want them, and we know we're going to win this World Series, and then we'll get even next year.
Interesting. I had not thought of that. I actually thought it dissipated just because it's the World Series.
Yes.
And it maybe wasn't that big of a deal. Like it's weird. The weird thing about that pitch was everyone kept saying, oh, he really set the tone. He really set the tone for that game because they won. But he gave up hits to like six of the next nine guys.
Yeah, it was really stupid. And,
yeah. And you know how I feel about this stuff. I hate it when people throw at people.
Oh, me too. I hate it. And then everyone, whatever fan base you're, you know, saying you hate it, then they get mad at you. But yeah. No, it's a stupid thing to do because you don't know if you're going to, you know, have pinpoint control in that very moment. You could throw it at his face and kill him or break his face. But the Royals were so mad about it after the game, and they were making comments. And I think that, you know, a few things might have come into play. Number one, the team's going to have been warned, you know, sternly by the commissioner's office that, like, if you keep this going, we're going to have penalties that you've never seen before because it's the World Series, and stop messing with the World Series and don't ruin our World Series. That's number one. Number two, I believe that the Royals did not want to have – I think that Ned Yost maybe, you know, spearheaded to say – we don't need to do this right now. Let's win a World Series, and then we'll worry about this. And the players all gathered together and said, you know, those so-and-sos are going to be in our place opening day next year. Let's get Syndergaard then. That's what I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's interesting. I it would not be unlike Kansas City has shown. That's definitely a game that you have Ventura start. Because he likes to get that fired up in that. But that's, to me, like, you know, my overarching thing. It's funny when I think about this world, this playoffs, the Bautista bat flip to me is the one signature moment. Even if the Blue Jays would have won the World Series, we would be watching that moment forever. That is. And I'm curious what you think of this. I feel like that actually was a remark that marked a culture change. I think people are getting less upset about the bat flip stuff now.
Yeah, and I think that mainly because it was Jose Bautista that did it, and when Jose Bautista does it, there's you know, he has a lot of,
he's a veteran
game. He's a great hitter. He's an extremely intelligent guy. He has represented baseball. He's represented his country wonderfully over time. And so when he does something like that, you're like, okay, you know, this isn't, you know, some hothead rookie that's doing it. So I think that that had a lot to do with it. But yeah, I mean, you're allowed to show some emotion in the game. And these old school guys are kind of like leaving the game. You don't see that attitude a lot. The veteran guys now, they're very few and far between as far as being like traditionalists and kind of curmudgeon-y. And I just remember, I mean, just from covering the Astros, like the younger generation that was coming up, the Morgan Ensbergs and the Adam Everetts, and I'm not saying specifically that they were sort of grumbling about it, but, you know, the Bagwell Biggio guys that were just like so staunchly, like, you cannot show that you're having any fun playing this game. Right. You cannot do even a fist pump if you hit a home run in a big moment, like nothing. And the younger guys were like, come on. Yeah. Like, do we really have to act like we're not having any fun? Are we allowed to have some fun? And I think that this generation of players that we're seeing now is like, you know, yeah. I mean, I was just watching the Astros. I mean, Evan Gattis would get excited. Like, yeah. Evan Gattis, I mean, he's young. He looks a little bit older. But, you know, he's a pretty traditional old school guy. And, you know, he showed some emotion. And that's okay. You're allowed to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And I really think the culture is shifting on it. You know, it's funny. There was all this. After the Bautista bat flip, there were all these self-righteous, hey, come on, just let him have fun. Why are all you people yelling at Jose Bautista? But I didn't actually see anybody actually yelling at Jose Bautista.
No.
Except for the guy that threw the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. It was basically like a media invention, to be honest with you.
I agree with you. People kept talking about it
so much, and you just assume that people are going to be offended by it. And all of a sudden, you're like looking for people who are offended by it. And outside of like the greater Dallas Arlington area, I don't think anybody was offended by it.
I think you're right. And I think so. I think that's good. I think that is a move in the positive direction. And it leads me to one other thing that I really kind of loved during this World Series. And, you know, I don't know if this is a Manfred thing or what. It certainly seems possible. But I have loved anything that's promoted baseball, anything that's been about baseball. We're just not seeing as many of those sepia-toned, Mickey Mantle drinks Ovaltine and everything was wonderful in 1960 sales of baseball anymore. We're seeing all of these, like all the promotion stuff are Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and Carlos Correa, for crying out loud. They like you were a part of that. They were parading him around everywhere this World Series.
Yeah, no. And
he hung out with John Hamm.
Yeah, I know.
He must have thought, who is this old man?
I want to hang out with John Hamm. Good Lord. I needed to be there. Here's the first time that I noticed that, and that was that new campaign that they came out with, and it was like spring training, and they started running these commercials with this, and it was Buck Showalter saying, the greatest players in our game are playing right now. We're watching history right now with these stars right now. And I thought, we're shifting a little bit.
Yeah. And it's good, man. Yes. I gotta say, it's I don't mean any offense to like your Bob Costas or your older school guys like that. But for me, I love it. Like, it's so, not only do I love it personally, because listen, I'm hardly Mr. Young Guy either, but like, I love it because I love baseball, and I don't want, and baseball, I would argue, one of baseball's biggest problems. And I think a lot of the problems that baseball have had, like PEDs, and a lot of like the cultural, the team aspect and not wanting to promote individuals, have been part of this problem. Baseball is a game that is always obsessed with looking backward rather than looking forward. And so to see this conscious effort, and I think it's clearly been a conscious effort to look forward to that way, because no one's going to forget that Babe Ruth was awesome and Mickey Mantle was awesome and Hank Aaron was great. You can still respect all that, but not get so caught up in that and to concentrate what they have on the young players now. It was a really cool thing. And it made me, there have been times when the baseball postseason has ended and I've been like, man, baseball's in trouble. Football's so huge, and basketball's so cool, and baseball. But I will say, I feel like baseball is finally starting to kind of get it a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, they really went heavy on, I don't know how many things were written, and right around the All-Star game, how many All-Stars were 25 and under. There were like several stories written this season about the stars of the game that are 25 years old and under, and that was like this big theme. And it's really cool because they're looking forward, and then when they have like the ceremonial first pitches, it's all the old players and everyone goes crazy over it. It's so fantastic. And both. Then that's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect combination.
Exactly. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about, and you and I missed most of this just because we were actually at the games and not watching a lot of the preview on this stuff, but it is worth noting that if you talk to the average person about one of the things they took away from this World Series, it was Pete Rose and Alex Rodriguez, specifically Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have discussed Alex Rodriguez, and we have different thoughts on the matter, but I do think that it is undeniable that, you know, one thing that I like about that broadcasting seems to be moving in the direction of is, in some ways more than others, is, you know, I loved, just going back and watching, whatever your thoughts about Alex Rodriguez, the guy can break down an at-bat. He can break down what's going through a player's head. And so for me, it was very entertaining. It's weird because I know people thought Pete Rose was cute because he was like a walking meme during the playoffs. I tended to find it a little less cute. Maybe that's because I don't really like Pete Rose very much. Maybe because I was actually enjoying CJ Netkowski and Alex Rodriguez so much. But for me, you know, I do think it's telling that for all the talk on this, you know, you're still at a whim to whoever everybody chooses to be the broadcasters in these games. And I think some people loved Alex Rodriguez, and some people loved Tom Verducci. Some people didn't love Harold Reynolds, some people so on. But certainly I think that it's interesting to see how the game is, whatever your thoughts about any of those people, it's not, I like Tim McCarver as an analyst, but Tim McCarver represented old in a lot of ways, that other than maybe Pete Rose, who is less old and more crazy uncle at Thanksgiving.
Right.
I feel like the whole game, and even the broadcast booths, even Joe Buck's beard, for crying out loud, is projecting a little bit more youth and excitement in a way that I find very encouraging.
Yeah, I did not see 1 second of any of that, obviously. So I kept hearing about how great A-Rod was on the show, and I think it's awesome. And he does, and he's always, even the people that have been covering him through his career and absolutely despise him, say that he's extremely intelligent baseball guy. He knows the game very well. He can communicate about it very well. And I think it's great. And if he's adding that kind of perspective, then he absolutely should be doing that. He has worked very hard to reshape his image. I mean, we have talked extensively on that. And of course, I find it to be probably very forced, but whatever. I mean, he's doing it because he knows what he needs to do. If he can get on the show and he can add that kind of insight and, like you said, an appeal to the younger audience, then I have no problem with that. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, all these years that I've had these like arguments with people from where I'm from, because I'm from near Cincinnati, that it's not all like black and white. Like, I don't want Pete Rose to cease to exist as a functioning person who has every right to work. I just don't want him to be reinstated into baseball. Like, I think that A-Rod could be a very contributing member of society and in our baseball society. I just choose to not believe that he is playing the game of baseball as a clean player. Do I think he needs to be vilified as he goes on in life? No, but these are just my opinions. So Pete Rose, to me, you know, I haven't seen him on the show, but in a lot of ways, like, he's just kind of like the grumpy old ball player who doesn't think that anybody's as good as they were back in the day. You hear him say, "Oh, you think Mike Trout's the best player? Well, he struck out 187 times last year." Like, I don't really want to listen to that.
Yeah, agreed.
But A-Rod is a great communicator. He's always been a good speaker, and good for him. And I hope that he does get it together. And, you know, when his career is over, I hope that he can meld in society. I hope that he can be happy and have decent relationships with people and all the things that he's never had as a player, because he's been like this despicable person. You don't have to continue on like that. And good for him.
All right. So
does that make any sense?
Yeah, I don't know if I mean – I agree. I think an argument could be made that the A-Rod we're seeing now is actually maybe closer to the way he was all along, and maybe there have been so many people that have kind of headed out for him for so long that maybe the message of who he is has been skewed, while certainly being a flawed person in a lot of different ways. I mean, for crying out loud, any guy that has a Minotaur photo of a painting of himself above his bed with him with the body of a horse, there are probably some issues there. I don't think anyone's going to question that.
Yeah, the people had to deal with him on an everyday, regular basis. He treated people very poorly. I mean, that's just how it was. He did a lot of things that were extremely selfish. You know, a lot of things through his agent. I mean, whatever it was, you know, you don't have to, that doesn't mean that has to mark you for the next 40 years, but you can go through a baseball career, be one of the best players in the game, and actually be a pretty decent human being too. He chose not to. I mean, that's just how it was. Things are changing. Good for him. You know what happens when you turn 40, Will?
No, I don't. I have no idea.
Your perspective on life changes. Your perspective on people changes. You have life experiences. A lot of bad stuff can happen to you in life that didn't happen to you at 25. And you learn from it. And it's all good.
Yeah, you know, you've actually convinced me to take down this painting of myself as a Minotaur that's been sitting over my bed for the last 15 years. It's probably time. Okay, with that, we'll wrap up. I think we'll probably come back and do some more shows. Alice and I will discuss whether or not we're going to do a regular schedule or whether we will do it after big news. We may do like a general free agency preview, or just after like a big trade, whatever. We'll figure it out. Maybe it'll be more fun to just do like little 15-minute quick hits after something big happens when our schedule's a lot. But mostly, Alice, this is the end of our first season doing this, and I've had a blast, and thank you for playing along with me all this time.
This is really fun. This is like the highlight of my week every week, so thank you very much, Will.
Yeah, you know, you say that a lot, and it always makes me a little sad.
Why?
Because I'm glad that you enjoy this, but you know,
you're saying that this isn't worthy of being the highlight of my week. See, this is why, because I just get on Skype and I sit here and I can say whatever I just say whatever's on my mind. I can't do that in any other facet. I have to like be, you know, you have to think when you're writing, and you have to like report, and you have to make sure that you get all sides of every story. And here I'm just like, I'm just saying whatever I feel like saying.
Good. I love it. We need to get you. That's good. I agree. Okay. In that case, yes. In the professional, that's good. That makes me happy.
I want to plug one thing before
plug,
we
plug. Plug.
And
away.
I want to say this, yes, because this warms my heart. I happened to be in the right place at the right time. I was in the Royals dugout, and a group of reporters were around Dayton Moore, the general manager of the Royals. The Royals had just won the World Series, and we were getting some comments from him. Things were kind of starting to wind down. The celebration was about an hour in at this point. And so I break away from I get my quotes from Dayton, and I kind of break away, and I'm going to go back into the Royals clubhouse. And here I see this man walking toward me, and he's in his street clothes, and I don't recognize him at first, and I realize it's Terry Collins. So Terry Collins has come into the Royals clubhouse at Citi Field, and he has, what I assume, has gone into Ned Yost's office to congratulate him on winning the World Series. And now he's making his way into the dugout to congratulate Dayton Moore. And I happen to start filming this just with my iPhone. And he goes and he breaks into this group of reporters talking to Dayton. And he extends his hand to Dayton. And Dayton comes down from the bench. And they embrace. They hug. And Terry says congratulations. And then Terry walks away. And it made me want to cry. And I know that this goes on probably more than we think it does. But we don't capture it on film because it's so impromptu. And I just want everyone to know that Terry Collins had the ultimate act of sportsmanship and class an hour after the worst moment of his career, and I thought that was wonderful.
That is pretty awesome. That is undeniably awesome. And I'm glad this is not like, it feels like there are sports where he would have hit him with a chair. So I'm glad that baseball's not one of those sports. It's great. I think I actually saw that video. I don't think I realized that you were the one that took that video. I think I actually did see that video. So well done. Well done to you. May I give a plug to you for your journalistic acumen in that regard.
That's very nice. And I don't want any credit for it because it really was just being the right place at the right time. But I did actually start, when I realized who it was, I was like, oh my God, I got to start filming. I don't know what he's going to do, but I have to start recording this.
Yeah, he's going to hit him with a chair. Right? We have no idea what's going to happen. All right, Allison, thank you. I just want to emphasize, I've had a wonderful year doing this. We'll do some more off-season podcasts, but we've completed the first season. Thank you for doing this with me. I've had a blast.
Thank you, Will. Me too.
All right, everyone, of course, as always, follow Allison's stuff on Twitter at Allison Footer, AllysonFooter. We will be back. I will be back, non-Allison edition, next week with Matt Norlander, the college basketball reporter for CBS, who will be previewing the college basketball season, which is the sport that I love second as much as baseball. I guess it places. The NBA probably shows. College football might show. Anyway, the point is he's going to preview college basketball with me next week. But otherwise, please rate and review us on iTunes. Music is by the Sundogs. Give us a review, whatever you want. Thank you to Allison for playing around with me this year. We'll be back more with off-season stuff. But next week, Matt, otherwise, bye. Baseball's over. See you in 2016.